Last year, one of the most wonderful Talmidim of our yeshiva passed away right before Pesach. And we dedicate tonight's shiur l'zecher nishmas David Rattenstreich, David Chaim ben Tzvi Akiva. The din is that chometz that belongs to a non-Jew that's in my rishus, I'm not in violation of Bal Yerod by Motze unless I'm a Kabbal Achrayis. So if I sell my chometz to a non-Jew and I leave it in my house and I'm not accepting an Achrayis, there's no problem about Bal Yerod by Motze. The Gemara just says in the first parak Misochem that there is an issue that I may forget and eat the chometz. So you have to have a mechitza gavaya asar tfochim to separate, to remind you that that you shouldn't eat the chometz. A lot of people have cabinets in the kitchen and they keep all the chometz in the cabinets, but they keep on opening and closing the cabinets. They leave stamps there, they leave stationery there, they leave checkbooks, whatever, so that's not right. The Mishnah Berurah says that the mechitza gavaya asar tfochim should be closed. Once in a while, if you need something, you can open it, but it should be basically closed. If you share a room with another Jewish person, and he's not observant, and he doesn't sell his chametz, so then many achrayim, including the Vilna Goyim, Fein Shua, many other major achrayim assume that according to Rashi, there is Bal Yerod by Matzah. Chemetz Shal Yisrael Acher, there would be Bal Yerod by Matzah. There's only no Bal Yerod if it's Chemetz Shal Nochri. But it's Chemetz Shal Yisrael Acher, many hold that there is Bal Yerod, so if you have a roommate who's not observant, you have to see to it that he does sell his chametz. Ashkenazim have a minhag quoted by the Ramah that we don't eat kidneys, but that doesn't extend to Bal Yerod by Matzah, and it doesn't extend to Yisr Hanor. Kidneys is Mutah B'Hanor, and there's no problem of Bal Yerod by Matzah. The Shachin, the second Chelik Yerideya, quotes a tshuva from the Maral Bach. He's not talking about kidney or something similar. Whenever something is not awesome in our Torah, it's not awesome in the Rabbanon, it's only awesome because of a minig, like kidneys. So if you cooked it in a pot, by mistake, let's say somebody cooked some kidneys in a Pesach Dikah pot, so there's no need to kasher the pot. You just wait 24 hours and it's a cliche in a ben yomo. Even though the Gzeira de Rabbanon prohibiting us from using a trefa kli even after 24 hours go by applies even to macholas asuras that were cooked mid Rabbanon, that's how the Shach said, it doesn't make a difference whether the trefa food that I cooked was trefa deraisa, trefa Rabbanon, but if it's only a minig that it's asa, so then kli sheinu ben yomo, there's no Gzeira de Rabbanon. On Erev Pesach after Chatzos, we're not allowed to eat chametz, but kidneys we may eat. That's how the Achrayim say. The meaning that the kidneys only applies on Pesach. And if you have little children who don't, lo higir lechinoch, the child doesn't understand what the Yontav is, doesn't understand what Pesach is all about. So one is not permitted. Also, l'achila b'yadayim, the Gemara has in Perek Cheresh, in the end of Yevamos, you're not permitted to feed a child macholas asuras deraisa, even though he's lo higir lechinoch. There's a machlokes, the Rambam and the Rashba, whether you're permitted to feed a macholas asuras the Rabbanon. We usually don't allow macholas asuras the Rabbanon, but if something is only asa mitam minig, it's not even an isa the Rabbanon, so then Chacham Avadi Yosef has a tshuva. He says that al pi pashtu, that's mutar l'achila b'yadayim. So you're permitted to give little children corn, whatever, kidneys, other things. If they don't understand what Yantav is all about, so then there's no prohibition. We have the institution of Mechiras Chometz. It was developed sort of in the 1800s. It was approved by the author of the Nesivis HaMishpat, Anchoish HaMishpat. We appoint the rabbi as our shliach to sell a chometz on our behalf to the Nochri. We don't sell a chometz to the rabbi. We appoint him as our shliach to sell a chometz. The Gemara has a principle in Nazir that Milsa Di'il La'motzi Obid Shaliach La'motzi Mashvi. It's a principle in secular law also. If there's something that I myself don't have the ability to do right now, I cannot appoint a shliach to do it on my behalf. So let's say I appoint the rabbi as a shliach today. I speak to a rabbi today. I appoint him as a shliach to sell all of my chametz, and then tomorrow I buy a box of Cheerios. So I myself couldn't have sold the Cheerios that I didn't buy yet. So dovah shelo bal yodim. As far as I'm concerned, I don't own those Cheerios yet. So I cannot appoint the rabbi as a shliach to sell the chametz on my behalf if I myself cannot sell at home. So that's what many of the later poskim write. Stechemin has a lot about this, that a person should be careful not to buy any chametz after he already appointed the rabbi as the shlich. And if he did buy additional chametz, You should call up the rabbi again and tell him, I'm appointing you as a shliach to sell the nuchamet that I just bought as well. The minig is that when you appoint someone as a shliach to do anything for you, whether to give a get to your wife, or to be mekadesh and ish on your behalf, or to sell a house for you, or to sell chametz for you, the minig is, the Rambam records the minig, meaning is that the one who is going to become the shaliach gives a handkerchief to me, the one who is appointing him, and the caliph shalkoina, and thereby he acquires the power of attorney. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Mechira that the kinyan suitor is not necessary and it doesn't really make any sense and it doesn't really accomplish anything. So the Chazon Ish said, okay. The Rambam said it's senseless, so it's a minig shtu, so we don't do it. So the Stipler and the Chazon Ish didn't have that practice. When they never sold the chametz to the nochri, but they would appoint the rabbi as the shliach on their behalf to sell their chametz. So they would never bother to make a kinyan with the rabbi because they understood the Rambam says that it's a minig shtus. Rav Soloveitchik thought not so. The Rambam starts off by saying the minig does make any sense, but then he does knock sense into it. And Rav Soloveitchik thought that the minig is binding, that we should, that's the common practice. When you appoint the rabbi as a shliach, the rabbi gives him a handkerchief and he acquires power of attorney, the right to sell the chometz on behalf of the balabatim. Strictly speaking, the mechiras chometz can apply to bread, cake, cookies, noodles, anything that has chometz ingredients in it. Rav Soloveitchik every year used to encourage the balabatim that they shouldn't sell chametz bien. They shouldn't sell chametz bien as opposed to tarubas chametz means do you have more than 50% of the ingredients consist of grain, of flour, or is it less than 50%? So if it's less than 50%, then it's called tarubas chametz. If it's more than 50%, then it's called chametz bien. So the Chumra is based on a B'chor Shor. That's the sefer written by the author of the Tfuah Shor on Yerodeh. B'chor Shor on Psochim writes based on the Gemara in the end of Masechus Shabbos that we only permit ha'aroma. Ha'aroma means a legal fiction. We're not in the business of selling groceries. We don't have a grocery shop. What's going on here? We sell a chametz to the Nochri and then he sells it back after Pesach. So the whole thing is what we call in legal terms, it's a legal fiction. It's legal, but it's a legal fiction. So the B'chor Shor quotes a Gemara in the end of Masechus Shabbos that ha'aroma is only permissible with respect to a din derabbanan and not with respect to a din deraisa. The Gemara there happens to be talking about a different kind of haram. The Gemara is not talking about a legal fiction. So the Pashup Pshat is that the Gemara has nothing to do with Mechiras Chametz. And the Pashta says that you are permitted to sell even a loaf of bread, even real Chametz Mamash. But Rav Soloveitchik apparently had this family tradition that they are machmer for this Bechor Shor, and he used to encourage all the Balabatim also, not just for Bnei Yeshiva. He used to encourage the Balabatim as well that they shouldn't rely on Mechiras Chametz. If a person has a liquor shop, a person has a grocery store, and he has a lot of chametz, he has tons of chametz, so then Rav Soloveitchik said, the meaning always was that you make a Mechiras Chametz, so he said, you shouldn't have your Mechiras Chametz done with the Mechira Klolis, that the rabbi sells all the chametz from all the 300 balabatim. The rabbi should make a separate Shtar Mechira for the grocer, or for the one who has the liquor shop. But to rely on the Mechira Klolis, that should only be if it's Taruvah's Chametz. Why is it any better if it's Taruvah's Chametz? Because the Rabbi Natam's opinion in the beginning of Perek Elu Ivrin is that Bal Yerod Deraisa is only on Chametz Bien, and on Taruvah's Chametz there's no Bal Yerod Deraisa. The two versions of what the Rabbi Natam said, whether he only said with respect to Chametz Nukshe there's no Bal Yerod Deraisa, or even Taruvah's Chametz. So we assume that the Rabbi Natam even said it by Taruvah's Chametz. It's not Bal Yerod Deraisa, it's only Bal Yerod Derabbanan. So since it's only Bal Yerod Derabbanan, so there we permit Harama. But this again, this is a big Chumrah. There are those who don't like to rely on Mechiras Chametz at all. Okay, the Vilna Gaon thought that people don't really have a Gemiras Das to sell a Chametz. Because they know that after Pesach, everything is going to be there. So they never really had mind to sell it in the first place. Okay, that's a different time, not to rely on Mechiras Chametz at all. But the generally accepted practice is that we do rely on Mechiras Chametz. Most even rely on Mechiras Chametz for Chametz Bien, for bread, cakes, and cookies, and so on. And Rav Soloveitchik used to encourage that one should follow this Chumrah not to rely on Mechiras Chametz when the Chametz is Bien, when the flour component in the ingredient and the food is more than 50%. A bracha is only the Shulchan Aruch paskens that a bracha is only recited on bedikas chametz if the bedikah is done leil arba osar, or if our Pesach Ali is b'Shabbos, so we do the bedikas chametz leil yud gimel. So that's the zman shetikna chachamim. Then a bracha is recited. Whenever one does a bedikah mukdemis earlier, like people are leaving the dormitory, so the din is that if you leave your home within 30 days before Pesach, you leave after Purim. That's within 30 days before Pesach. So the Gemara says you're obligated to do bedikas chametz, even though it's clear that you don't plan to be there on Pesach. You can't get back into the dormitory; it's going to be locked up. So the Gemara still says that you have to perform bedikas chametz. Many Rishonim hold that you do say a bracha, and the Shulchan Aruch says a bracha is not recited. You only recite a bracha if you do the bedikah b'leil yudalit. If a person doesn't plan to be in his home, he's going away to Eretz Yisrael, he's leaving the dormitory, doesn't plan to be there on Pesach, so you have to do a decent bedikah. You don't have to make yourself crazy to go look. The Gemara says that, strictly speaking, crumbs on a couch or crumbs on the floor, pirurim are batal me'aleim, that there's no problem, there's no issue about your rabbi matzah. So you don't have to do bedikas chametz as far as the crumbs are concerned. The meaning is that everybody sees to it that they don't have any crumbs of chametz around either. Why is that? So that's not so much because of the bedikas chametz, because of your rabbi matzah. We're afraid that the person may be absent-minded in the middle of Pesach and he may eat one of the crumbs. We're concerned about eating it. So if the person doesn't plan to be there on Pesach at all, he clearly doesn't plan to be there, so he doesn't have to worry about the crumbs. He can follow what it says in the Gemara, that the pirurim abotol me'aleim. Or some communities in Europe had a minig that on Pesach they're concerned maybe the faucet has had some chametz on it, so they put all kinds of shmatas on the knobs and on the faucet, on the spigot and everything. So if you're not going to be there, if you're not going to be there, you don't have to put the shmatas on. You don't have to go crazy about all these things unless you're going to be there. But the bedikas chametz you have to do. You have to do a decent form of bedikas chametz. The Mishnah says, and the Gemara spells it out, in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim, the bedikas should be done by Laila, Elor Haner, and it's not proper to eat before you do the bedikas chametz, even if you're going to do the bedikah earlier than Leil Yudalit. The proper practice should be that right after Laila, right after Tzeisak Echavim, one should perform the Bedikas Chometz. Without, you shouldn't learn before, and you shouldn't get engaged in any other activity. You should run right away and perform the Bedikas Chometz. Now the Gemara says that right after you finish the Bedikas Chometz, you have to recite a bittul, Habarik Tzor Sheivatel. We follow, in Shulchan Aruch, we follow the practice of the Rosh, that we have a double bittul. We recite a bittul Chometz right after we finish the Bedikas Chometz. And we're mevatel all of the chametz, de lo chazit, de lo chamit, de lo biyarte. Whatever chametz we are not aware of, whatever we didn't see, we're mevatel that. In the morning, after we burn the chametz, then we're mevatel the chametz, whether we did see, we didn't see. Maybe there was some chametz that we saw last night and we misplaced it. So in the morning, when we recite the second bittul, we're mevatel all of the chametz, whether the chametz that we did see or the chametz that we didn't see. The bittul has to be said in a language that the person understands. It's not like Kiddush, it's not like Kriya Shema that you hear it, say if you recite in Hebrew, even if you don't understand every word, as long as you just understand the Inyan, the bittul you really have to understand. So if one doesn't know Aramaic, he should say it in English, or say it whatever Spanish, whatever the Sfas HaMedina happens to be, whatever language the person understands. The bittul is, so what does it say in the bittul? So it's a machlekes, Rashi and Tosis. What is the content of the bittul? So according to Rashi, bittul is a declaration that I don't plan to eat the chametz, I don't plan to get hanor from the chametz. He says, as far as I'm concerned, it's ka'afra di alma. It's like dirt, it's like dust. I don't consider it edible. According to Tosis, there is no such thing. What do you mean you don't consider it edible? But it's a loaf of bread, it is food, it is edible. So Tosis says, no, bittul simply means hefker. You're declaring the chametz ownerless, and since it doesn't belong to you, according to Tosis' opinion, there's no violation of Bayur Rabbi Matzah. So we really say both. We should really first say, like Rashi, if you're mafke the chametz, so the chametz doesn't belong to you anymore. So then, according to Rashi, you can't fulfill. Rashi holds that declaring that, as far as I'm concerned, the chametz is not useful, not edible, it's a piece of junk. I don't plan to eat it, I don't plan to get any benefit from it. So that declaration can only be done on chametz that belongs to me. So if I'm first going to be makir the chametz, then I lost my opportunity to fulfill this mitzvah of declaring bittul. According to Rashi, declaring the bittul is a mitzvah of tashbisu. According to Tosfos, it's not a mitzvah, it's a gimmick. If you're mafka your chametz, so that's a gimmick, that's a way to avoid violation of your rabbi matz. So first you should declare kol chamira de lo chazite lehevi libotel ka'afra diara. I declare, as far as I'm concerned, it's not edible, I don't plan to eat it, I don't plan to get hana. And then we tack on at the end, v'lehevi hefker, it should be hefker also, to satisfy Tosfos' opinion, that Tosfos says there is no such thing as declaring that, as far as I'm concerned, it's not edible, that the bittul simply means that you mafker it. So we should really say this, if one doesn't understand Aramaic, you should say the bittul in English. It's not sufficient that the father of the household says the bittul chametz. He gives allowance to his children and they buy their own candies and they buy their own chametz. So his wife sometimes has, she buys chametz, she leaves in her pocketbook, and she has to be mevatla her chametz. He can be mevatla chametz that belongs to him, and the wife has to be mevatla chametz that belongs to her, and the children have to be mevatla chametz that belongs to them. And each one has to know what he or she are talking about when they say the bittul. So let them not say in Aramaic. Most of the women don't study Gemara and they don't understand Aramaic. So they should say in Sfas HaMedina, whatever language they do understand. Some people have a shtick, a naya shtick, that they rent the whole apartment to a nochri a few days before Leil Yudalid, and the mele of the apartment is not theirs, and they don't have to do B'dikas Chametz. So this is not really right. There's a takanas chachamim that you're supposed to do B'dikas Chametz. Mishnah Berurah quotes a shtickel ha'arameh that he says it's not that bad. If you have 20 rooms in the apartment and you rent 19 rooms to the Nachri, at least you're going to do B'dikas Chametz on one room. If that room that you're going to do the B'dikas Chametz in is a room that Shemachnisim by Chametz, if you have 20 rooms, you're probably going to have certain rooms we never bring in any Chametz. So that Mikar Adin, you don't need B'dikas Chametz on that. So if you're going to rent the 19 rooms where you do bring in Chametz, you're going to retain for yourself the one room that you never bring in any Chametz. So you've just undone the whole Takanas Chacham of doing B'dikas Chametz. So that's not right. Shulchan Aruch says that in connection with the B'dikas Chametz, we should check all the pockets. Sometimes people put candies in their pocket. They put chametz, put cookies in their pocket. So you should check all the pockets. It's assumed that it doesn't mean with a candle. You just check, you put your hand in the pocket. And the same is true regarding an automobile. The automobile is not a it's not a room of a house that you live in. It's like a pocket, so you have to check the automobile also to make sure that you don't have any chametz in the automobile. But the pashtus is it doesn't necessarily have to be done or on air with a candle or with a flashlight. You can just check it with whatever lights there happen to be. There is a machlokes in Achrayim, and the common minig is that if you have a house, let's say, with 20 rooms, and you're going to sell all the chametz that you're going to sell to the nochri, you're going to pack into one room, and you're going to rent that room to the nochri in order to be makna the chametz to him, agab the karka, with a kinyan chotzer on top of the karka. So the minig is, even though many oppose it, the minig is that we don't require bedikas chametz on that room which we plan to rent to the nochri. Even though tonight we didn't rent it to the nochri yet, minigas we don't do b'dikas chametz on that room. The Gemara points out that chametz b'pesach is osur b'hano, even if the chametz belongs to a non-Jew. Chametz shel nachri is also osur b'hano. So the Shulchan Aruch has a din that you're not permitted to walk by a non-Jewish bakery on Pesach intending to smell the fresh reyach from the bread that was just baked. If you're walking to shul and you happen to pass by, you're walking to the train on Chalmud, you happen to pass by a bakery and you smell, and you're inhaling, and you smell the fragrant, the good smell of the chametz. So the Gemara says that's the Yepshev Eloi Kamachav, and strictly speaking, you're not in violation of Yisur HaNoah, but to go out of your way, I really normally walk on this side of the street, I go out of my way to walk on the other side of the street in order to have HaNoah from smelling the freshly baked chametz. So the Shulchan Aruch gives that as an example of chametz being osur b'hano. You're not allowed to get hano from chametz like that. Well, let's say a fellow drives, has to make a dollar or two. So someone asks him, could you drive this truck for me and deliver the chametz from this place to that? He asks me to deliver chametz from one location to the other on Chalamay. So to get salary for delivering chametz is considered a violation of Yisuri hano. You're not allowed to get hano from the chametz. If you have pills, medications, most of the medications, if they don't have flavoring in them, let's say you have most of the medications are nifsa me'achila sakelev. Usually, if you have anything that's treif, so the Gemara says once it's nifsa me'achila sodom, it's muta b'achila. Unless you're going to sit and eat the whole bowl full of it, so that's achshave. You demonstrate that as far as you're concerned, the thing is still royal achila b'harai that you're eating it. But if you just take a pill every day or a pill every 12 hours or something, so we assume today, most of the poskim today assume that that's not considered achshave. And that's mutter to take such a pill. If the pill has flavoring, then you got a problem. The flavoring may be treif, flavoring may be chametzik. But if it does not flavoring and it doesn't taste good, so as far as treif is concerned, sufficient if it's nifsa machilos. And as far as chametz is concerned, it has to be nifsa machilos akelev. Most of the pills are nifsa machilos akelev. There's nothing to discuss. And strictly speaking, they're all kosher. If you can get with a hechsher and it's not that much more expensive, so that's wonderful. You should try to do that. But if it's going to be way more expensive than the treifet pills, so strictly speaking, the treifet pills are not treif. On Erev Pesach, the first Mishnah says in Arvi Psochim that we're not permitted to eat the meal samach lemincha ktana. That's how we understand in Shulchan Aruch. Mincha ktana means the last 2.5 hours of the day before the shkia. Samach means a half an hour before. 2.5 hours, that means 3 hours before the end of the day. The day usually ends at 6 o'clock, not because of daylight savings, so the day ends a little after 7. So 3 hours before is going to be 4 o'clock, so starting from 4 o'clock on, 4:15 or so. So you're not permitted to eat a meal, Kadesh Yoichal Matzah L'Teyoven. In the days of this, Beis HaMikdosh, the idea was Kadesh Yoichal Karban Pesach L'Teyoven. This man is that we don't have Karban Pesach, so we still are concerned Kadesh Yoichal Matzah L'Teyoven. What exactly is he going to eat already? What can he eat? Chametz he can't eat already from before Chatzos. And matzah, we're not allowed to eat a whole day. On Erev Pesach, he can't eat chametz, can't eat matzah. So what's he going to eat? And the Gemara says, so let's say he'll have a little fish, he'll have a little chicken or something. The Gemara says, mini tagima amuta. So what are you discussing here that he's not allowed to eat the last 3 hours? So the Pashup Shatna means he's going to sit down and eat a whole kugel and a whole chicken and a whole meal. He doesn't have to wash. No chametz, no matzah. He's going to have a filling meal. That's the Pashup Shatna. So the Rabbi Natama, not the Gemara, poses this kasha. What's he going to eat already? He can't eat chametz from a long time ago. He can't eat matzah all day on our place. What's he eating? That's what Rabbi Natama came up with his idea. He's eating egg matzahs. Even though matzah with May Peris, I'm in Marla Hachmetz. Rashi says Marla Hachmetz, so we don't eat egg matzahs all Pesach. So the Rabbi Natama, out of respect for Rashi, his grandfather, wouldn't eat egg matzahs all Pesach. But on Erev Pesach, he ate the egg matzahs. We don't eat egg matzahs, even on Erev Pesach. It says on the box, it's only mutav v'choyle miskeinim, because we're concerned with machmer, that Rashi's opinion seems to be that if you have flour, Pesach diga flour, mixed with mei peiris, it's going to be memahir lahachmetz, and you may not be able to control it. Can you eat any product on Erev Pesach that used matzah mel? So let's say the balabasta took matzah mel and she made matzah ball. She made knedlach. So the Mishnah Berurah says that you may eat on Erev Pesach. You shouldn't eat a ton of knedlach. You can eat knedlach on Erev Pesach if you're hungry. You're allowed to. Aye, but it's made from matzah. So the Mishnah Berurah says, but since the matzah was mevusheles, you take matzah mel, you take matzah, you make it into fine flour, then you cook it and you make it into the knedl. So since it's mevusheles, so the Gemara says that's a matzah shira, and matzah shira is not kosher for fulfillment of the mitzvah on Leil HaSeder. So since the knedl is not kosher for the mitzvah, so that kind of matzah is permissible to eat on Erev Pesach. That's what the Rabbi Natam said. The matzah shira may be eaten on Erev Pesach, except the Rabbi Natam said it on egg matzahs, on May Peris, and we don't follow that Rabbi Natam because we're concerned maybe the May Peris is Mimar L'Achmetz. But as far as knedlach is concerned, that's a matzah shira, that for sure, you're not yotzi yidecha vasem b'leil haseder, so that you're permitted to eat on Erev Pesach. What if you took matzah mel, and you made a whole cake out of it, and you baked the cake, not that it's not mevusheles, like knedlach hakuk, you did a second afiyah, but you mixed in a lot of flavoring, and you have a filling and so on, so the Mishnah Berurah says that's a big machloikas, whether that just became matzah shira, because initially when it was baked, it was lechem oni. It was kosher matzah, and you never were mevashel it. You just baked it again a second time, but you baked it with a lot of made peris and a lot of additional flavoring and filling and so on, pie filling. So that's a machloikas, and the Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't use such a cake by the Seder to be yetzer the mitzvah, because maybe it's not matzah hashir. But on the other hand, it's not proper to eat it on Erev Pesach. To the Seder, you shouldn't use it because maybe it is matzah hashir. And on Erev Pesach, you shouldn't eat it because maybe it's not matzah hashir. So the Mishnah Berurah recommends one should be machmer in both directions. Now there's a new shtick. Recently, people are so eager to eat the rolls, so they take the companies, they take matzah mel, and they make it into rolls. So mamish looks like bread. So that's hamotzi. If you eat a matzah roll on Pesach, that's a regular hamotzi. You took flour, and you mixed it with water, and you baked it, and it looks like a bread, and it tastes like a bread. It's a bread that's kosher l'Pesach. Okay. It's lechem that's kosher l'Pesach. So that's hamotzi. If you have matzah brei that was fried, let's say you have matzahs that were baked at a hamotzi, and then you break them into little pieces and you soak them in egg with milk, whatever, however your mother makes it, and then she fries it in a frying pan. So then we usually assume, based on the Gemara Brachos, that it depends how large the pieces were. That if the pieces of matzah have a kezias in a single piece, sometimes your mother will break up the matzah into tiny pieces, sometimes you have big chunks. So usually, it's hard to say usually, different people make it differently. So you have a big chunk that's a kezias, so then even though it's cooked, even though it's mevushal, it retains the bracha of hamotzi. But if the tisin are less than a kezias, and you cooked it by frying it on the fire, so then the bracha becomes a bar minim zayis. Wine for arbekoises. The Shulchan Aruch says if you can't get wine, you should drink chamar medina. But everybody can get wine, unless a person has a health condition. So that's a different story. He has to work out to give his chanetz. So healthy people should have wine. One Tana is of the opinion that it has to be red wine. There is such an opinion in Rishonim who paskan like that Tana. That's not the generally accepted opinion. So lachatchila, look, if you can get red wine, matov. It's better. And if you don't like red wine, or you're allergic to it, or it poses a health problem, so you shouldn't look for trouble, you should use white wine. People were discussing whether yain mevushal is acceptable or not. So the Shulchan Aruch says, yes, yain mevushal is good for arba kaisis. The only issue is it good for kiddush? For the first of the arba kaisis, it's good for kiddush all year long. The Rambam follows the psak of the Gaonim, that yain mevushal, wine that is cooked, is not kosher for Kiddush, because it wasn't, the Gemara says, wine that's not kosher, l'nasach agabi hamizbech, may not be used for Kiddush. So the Rambam holds that yayin mevushal is no good for Kiddush. We don't really paskin like the Rambam, that's a chumrah, that some people like to be machmir for the Rambam, not to use yayin mevushal for Kiddush. Question is, kerem wine has different bottles of wine, and some of them say this is mevushal, and some of them say this is not mevushal. Ramosha Feinstein writes in his sefer that this is not correct. He says all the wines that are pasteurized are automatically mevushal. The Rabbonim who give the Hechsher and the Kerem wine follow a different opinion. They are of the opinion that the wine is only called mevushal if they heated it till 212. So it already started to evaporate. And Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that that's not correct. He quotes that the Or Zarua, the Bir Agro in Yeridei, Hilchas Tam Yen, quotes from the Sefer Or Zarua. The Or Zarua was mesupek, how hot do you have to, how high a degree temperature that you have to heat the wine, that it should be considered yayin mevushal, that it should be possible in nasa chagav mihamizbech, and there shouldn't be a chashash a maga akum, and it should be possible mitam yayin sheinu roi nasa chagav mihamizbech. So the Or Zarua was mesupik, maybe have sheres that'll be shul. Maybe if you heated the wine till it became a little bit lukewarm, maybe that's sufficient. He's mesupik, so he says, no, that's not enough, you have to have real mevushal. So what's real mevushal? Something higher than lukewarm. Is Yatzal lettuce. Why should one think that he jumps all of a sudden from Poshrim to 212, to Mala Resichim? So Moshe thinks that it's not correct. He thinks that all the pasteurized wines are all Mevushal. And if one is interested in being Choshish for this Rambam's opinion, not to use Yai Mevushal for Kiddush, so all the pasteurized wines would be included. If one has non-observant relatives, the Gemara has a chumrah, a big chumrah, that if a nochri manufactures wine, so we're not allowed to drink it, That's because we're concerned that it may lead to intermarriage. Just like if Anochi bakes bread or if Anochi cooks food, Bishalakama, Pasakam, there's Exer Mishum Benaseim, may lead to intermarriage. So the same applies to Stam Yenam. But if that would be the only concern that it may lead to intermarriage, then it would only be Asa Bishti, it would be Mutta Bahanor, like Pasakam and Bishalakam. There's only Asa Bachila Mutta Bahanor. Why did they impose an Isa Hanor on Stam Yenam? So the Tosis explains based on the Gemara, because there's an additional concern, a far-fetched concern, that if that would be the only concern, they would never have instituted this Isser at all. But because they were concerned about the intermarriage, so then they slapped on, in addition to the Isser Achila, they slapped on an Isser Hanor. What's the concern? Maybe the Nachri was Menasech Diyai. Even though it's so far-fetched, that's really Milsa de l'shchich l'gozer v'arabanon, they would never have been gozer that, but because they were gozer anyway, because of the chashash of intermarriage, so they added on an Isser Hanor. So even though this prohibition of Isser Hanor is because we're concerned the Nochri may have been Menasech Hidla v'rizor. That's the Abba Jew who's not observant. He's not observant not only in the Jewish religion. He's not observant, he doesn't observe any other religion either. He's not Menasech Yayin, not to the Elokei HaShemayim Behoretz, nor to Yoshke, nor to any Abba Rizor. Nonetheless, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that a Jew who's Mechal Shabbos Befereser, a Jew who's an Apikuris, any Jew who has Dina Ka'akum, a Jew who has a status like an Akum, not so easy to gain such a title. If a Jew is Dina Ka'akum, so he asks Yayin b'magoy, because it's Dina Ka'akum l'chumra, so he asks Yayin. So that's why we all know, if you think that you're expecting guests to come who are totally non-observant, and they may ask Yayin with their maga, so you have to make sure that you have Yayin Mevushal on the table. So according to Rav Moshe, all of the pasteurized wines are all Mevushal, even on the Kerem bottle is going to say that it's Ein Mevushal. He thinks that everything is mavushal. Everything that's heated up till past the point of yatzalet, this is mavushal. How much exactly is yatzalet? That's a question. Rav Moshe in different tshuvas is guessing. Is it 175, 180, somewhere around there? Somewhere between 170 and 180, 165, 180, somewhere around there. So he thinks that all pasteurized wines is all yayin mavushal. Years ago, during the Prohibition years, it was against the law to produce alcoholic beverages here in America unless one needed it for sacramental purposes. So the Jews were all making wine because they needed it for Kiddush and Abdullah and for Abakosis. So at that time, there was a professor, Louis Ginsberg, from the Jewish Theological Seminary, who was quite a personality. He used to sit and learn Megillah Rosh. We don't have those kinds. He knew how to learn. He used to sit and learn Megillah Rosh. We don't have those kind of people anymore. Galenta Slabotka. He was connected, not connected. He was the Jewish Theological Seminary. So he wrote a whole tshuva at that time that mastering to the American government that it's not necessary for the Jews to make wine for sacramental purposes for Kiddush and Avdol and Abakosis. Grape juice is just as good, and it shouldn't be allowed. They shouldn't allow the Jewish people to make wine. So at that time, many rabbanim opposed him, and they printed in their svarim that the grape juice is shahakal, and it's not bor piagofen. The Gemara says if you squeeze out a cluster of grapes and you have grape juice, if you squeeze it out on Friday, you're not allowed to squeeze it out on Shabbos. If you squeeze it on Friday, you can say kiddush over that grape juice. So the many rabbanim at that time, Rab Henkin was the big posik in America, in New York, in America. So he, as well as many others, said that grape juice is bor piagofen because if you would let it sit long enough, it would ferment and it would turn into wine. But here, this grape juice that they sell in the store, first of all, is treated with chemicals. Secondly, it's cooked. So it's never going to ferment. It'll never turn into wine. If it sits long enough, it'll get spoiled. But it's not going to ferment. It's never going to turn into wine. So many poskim were of the opinion that that's not acceptable for Kiddush and Abdullah. It's not bor piagofen at all. That shahakal nibidvar. So the position of Professor Louis Ginsberg was not really so accepted by the Orthodox. I don't know if the conservatives accepted it, but the Orthodox didn't accept it until Hagon Hatzarek HaMoshe Feinstein Paskin like that. And Moshe also assumed that grape juice is bor piagofen, despite the fact that it's not going to ferment, it's not going to turn into anything. And despite the fact that Rav Moshe was of the opinion that grape juice is bor piagofen and is good for Kiddush and Abdullah, he thought that for abrikosis it's not good, because abrikosis you have to drink a lechaim. You have to drink a toast four times. So you don't drink a toast over tomato juice, you don't drink a toast over apple juice, you have to have some alcoholic content. You have to have some degree of alcoholic content. So Rav Moshe thought that the grape juice is good for Kiddush and Avdolah, but it's not good for Abakosis. Rav Soloveitchik thought that once you're accepting already, he thought that maybe there is validity to the argument that grape juice is not Bar Pri HaGofen. But once has already been accepted, like Rav Moshe's psak, that the grape juice is Bar Pri HaGofen, so then he thought that it should be good for Abakosis as well. If it's wine, it's wine. He wasn't so convinced of Rav Moshe's position. And he himself, in the later years of his life, when he wasn't that healthy, he used to use grape juice for the Abakosis. One should keep in mind, however, that Pesach is Man Cheruseinu, and Joseph was supposed to show the way we are B'nei Chorin. So I used to learn Mecharusa with Dr. Naftali Neuberger, that's Rabbi Yaakov Neuberger's older brother, and he's a medical doctor. So he told me that this was 30 years ago. He told me at that time, the two nights of the year that you have the emergency room in hospitals is always full of Orthodox Jews are the two nights of Pesach, when people drink wine when it's not healthy, and they eat horseradish and they get sick, and they eat too much matzah, and they get sick from all of this. And this is utterly ridiculous, that this is Man Cheruseinu. That's how we celebrate our Cherus. This is terrible. I think now, in recent years, I think the worst day of the year for the Orthodox Jews is Purim. I think it... No one's worried so much about the mitzvahs. Years ago, they used to be so worried about the mitzvahs, they used to make themselves sick on Pesach night, which was utterly ridiculous. Now, no one cares about anything, and they get drunk on Purim, and they get seriously sick. We have to be careful not to get sick on Purim, and not to get sick on Pesach Chalila. If a person has a problem eating so many kizesim of matzah, so he has to cut down. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they recommend when you say moitzi matzah, you should have two kizesim, and then for korach, you should have one kizayis of matzah, And then for the afikoyim, you should have two kizeis. These are all chumers. If a person just feels that it's too much, so let him have one kizeis, one kizeis, one kizeis. There used to be a rabbi here in the neighborhood, Rabbi Shimon Schwab, was the rabbi by the Yekeshe community. He told me that in later years of his life, he wasn't healthy. He was very overweight. He wasn't healthy. He wasn't allowed to eat bread at all. So all year long, Shabbos and Yom Tov, he never washed. He never had a hamoitzi. Only on Pesach 98, one kazayis of matzah. And he said, there's two opinions of Shulchan Aruch, how big is a kazayis? Is it a chatzi beitza or is it a shlish beitza? So the Magen Avraham gives a psak, a compromise, that with respect to dinim deraisa, you have to be machma, with respect to dinim derabanan, you can be mekel. So Rabbi Schwab said, on the first night of Pesach, that's deraisa, so he ate a chatzi beitza, a kazayis of a chatzi beitza of matzah. The second night is Yom Tov Sheni Shel Gol, it's only derabanan, so he only ate a shlish beitza because he wasn't allowed to eat bread. He didn't want to get himself sick. So for one kazayis, he put his life a little bit into sakana. It wasn't that great a sakana. But if I was talking to some of the boys, they have a problem eating matzah. So don't look for trouble. Don't make yourself sick. If you can't eat five kazayis, and eat three kazayis. And one. If you can't eat three, so just eat one kazayis. Do like Rabbi Schwab did. Just eat a chatzi beitza the first night, and a shlish beitza the second night. Not mechuyav to get sick over the shmiras on mitzvahs. The Gemara says that maror hamavushal is not kosher for the mitzvah. It has to be raw. So one of the boys told me he has some medical condition that he's not permitted to eat raw vegetables. I remember years ago there was a Rebbe in the yeshiva who had that same medical condition, and he wasn't permitted to eat maror. So he had a fancy shaila. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, based on one of the Tanoim in the Gemara, that if you don't have, the Mishnah lists off five different vegetables that are acceptable for maror. What happens if you don't have any of those five vegetables? So Shulchan Aruch says, if you get stuck, so you should take any other vegetable that has a bit of flavor. So this Talmud Chacham had a shaila. Remember, he asked Rav Soloveitchik, maybe if he cooks the maror, it loses its identity as being romaine lettuce, but maybe it's considered like a miscellaneous vegetable. And any other vegetable that has a bit of flavor would also be acceptable. Rav Soloveitchik told him, no, that once you cook the vegetable, it loses its identity as a vegetable. It's considered a miscellaneous food. It's not considered a miscellaneous vegetable. And you don't gain anything by eating the maror hamavushal. If a person has a medical condition, he's not allowed to eat raw vegetables, so he shouldn't eat maror. You know, you're not mechuyav to get sick to eat the maror. The Gemara says that not only is maror hamavushal not acceptable, The Shulchan Aruch says that mara that's kavush. If you have mara that's soaking in water for 24 hours, then we apply kavush kemevushal, so it's considered as if the mara was mevushal, and it's not kosher for the mitzvah. The two, those who learn Yeridei will remember the two types of kavush. If you soak something in water, so the kavush is for 24 hours, and if you soak something in vinegar, so it's kavush b'chametz uvitzir, b'chametz is vinegar, so then it's kavush in a much shorter period of time. The many parts can say 6 minutes. 6 minutes can make kavush. That's what the Kafar Chaim writes. He quotes Achronim that a lot of people want to soak the romaine lettuce in vinegar because they think that that will help get the bugs off. So if you're soaking romaine lettuce in water, you don't have to be concerned that you may make a mistake and leave it soaking for more than 24 hours. You don't. If you plan to soak it for 23 hours, you're going to soak it for half an hour. So you're not going to make a mistake between, you're going to talk on a telephone. How long are you going to talk on a telephone? You're going to go to the bathroom, you're going to daven mincha in the middle. But it's not going to be 24 hours, you're not going to make a mistake. But if you're going to soak it in vinegar only for 2 minutes, and then you're going to start talking on the telephone, say 6 minutes may go by, and you may make a mistake, and use the romaine lettuce that was soaking in chaimetz for 6 minutes, which is puzzle. So that's why the Kafar Chaim quotes Achronim and say that you shouldn't even soak for less than the 6 minutes in chaimetz, because you may by mistake use it even if it'll soak for longer, and in that case it'll be possible. In Europe there was a common practice in many communities, they used to use horseradish for maror on the assumption that the Mishnah lists off five vegetables, and the Mogen Avraham quotes the Poskim who say that the third vegetable mentioned in the list is charein, is horseradish. There used to be a student here 40 years ago, who is now a professor in Ben Gurion University. His name is Schaefer, so he wrote an essay in the publication Gesher. Yeshiva used to have a publication years ago. A bridge between scientific knowledge and Torah knowledge. So he wrote a whole essay about the identification of horseradish as morer, and he showed that it's really a mistake, and he quotes all the early poskim that they never used to use horseradish, that it's not really at all. No one really thought that it's one of the five vegetables. The Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Talmud Yerushalmi that the five vegetables that are listed in the Mishnah are listed in descending order of importance. The more correct is to use the first vegetable, chazeres, and if you can't cut that, then you should use the second vegetable. If you can't use the, you can't get the second one, then you should use the third one itself. So the first one, chazeres, is lettuce. That's what chazeres means, lettuce. In the days of the Tanoim, they didn't have regular lettuce growing in Eretz, so they only had romaine lettuce. Okay, so the Mishnah is clearly talking about romaine lettuce. Maybe iceberg lettuce is just as good. Maybe the difference between regular lettuce and romaine lettuce is so insignificant that regular lettuce is also acceptable. So there are many Rabbanim who think that regular lettuce is acceptable. Rav Soloveitchik always used to insist that everyone should buy romaine lettuce. How is lettuce maror? It's not bitter at all. And why should that be the mufchor? That's the best vegetable to use. From the five listed in the Mishnah, that's to be preferred. So the Yerushalmi says yes, that if you would leave the romaine lettuce in the ground longer, then it would turn bitter. So therefore it's considered maror. So the Chazon Ish says, yeah, what it means is if you left it in the ground for longer and it turned bitter, then it's called maror. But if you detached it from the ground at an earlier stage, like we all do, and then you eat it and it tastes delicious, then he says that it's not maror. So that's not the generally accepted opinion. Generally, it's assumed that since if you would have left the romaine lettuce in the ground longer, it would have become bitter. So even if you cut it off earlier and it's not bitter at all, this vegetable is considered a vegetable of maror, and we assume that it is good. Why is that a hidden mitzvah davka to use romaine lettuce? So the Yerushalmi explains why. That this is reminiscent of the Shibud Mitzrayim, that originally it started off as a very sweet stay in Mitzrayim. That the Jews were working for the government, for the welfare of the country, together with the Mitzrayim. Everybody was working together. And then everything turned in the middle, and the Shibud was, everything was thrown on the Jews, and then they enslaved them, and so on. So the romaine lettuce is exactly symbolic of that. It starts off as something sweet, and then it becomes bitter in the end, the way the Shibud Mitzrayim was. Strictly speaking, there is a mitzvah to duchen every day in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz, if the Kohanim are called upon to duchen. The meaning by the Ashkenazim is we don't call upon them, so we don't ask them for a bracha, so they don't give the bracha. On Yontif, we call upon the Kohanim that they should duchen, so that's the mitzvah of duchening. There's a mistake that many people make, that all of the poskim complain about. The Gemara says when the Kohanim duchen, has to be panim keneged panim. The tzibur who are receiving the bracha have to be facing the Kohanim. So many people in the tzibba are so nervous about looking in the Kohanim's hands. The Gemara says it's not proper to look at the Kohen's hands. But so many people are so nervous about looking at the Kohen's hands that many people turn around their face and they have their back towards the Kohen. So the Gemara says that they're not included in the bracha. If you're in the shul and you don't bother to face the Kohanim, so you're not included in the bracha. The people, Amshabasar, is the people who didn't come to shul are included in the bracha, even though they're not facing the Kohanim. But the people in the shul who are not facing the Kohanim are not included in the bracha. So make sure that you do face the Kohanim. Le'olam, our minig is that the Kohanim pull the talis over the hands, so there's nothing to see anyway. Most shuls, the Kohanim cover over the hands. So you can't see the hands anyway unless you crawl under the talis. So there's nothing to be worried about. The Chafetz Chaim lived in Poland, so he says in Poland the meaning was that the Kohanim covered their face because they didn't want to look at the hands, and the hands used to be exposed. And he writes in the Mishnah Berurah that in Lithuania they cover their hands, so there's nothing to see. And in Poland they used to cover their faces, so they solved their problem. They didn't want to look at the hands, and you have a problem. How you're going to avoid looking at the Kohanim? But in America, I rarely saw it. Most of the time, Kohanim cover the hands, so there's nothing to see anyway. In the days of the Gemara, there was a practice, the Gemara in Sota quotes, that when the Kohanim would say each word of the Pesukim, Yirach Hashem Yishmerecha, the Tzibu would recite a Pasuk in connection with the word recited by the Kohanim. By the time you get to the Shulchan Aruch, so they say that it's too hard to concentrate, that we're supposed to pay attention to the Bracha the Kohanim are giving us. If we're going to be reciting Pesukim simultaneously with the Kohanim, reciting the brachas, that's too difficult to concentrate. Somehow in the days of the Gemara they were geniuses, so they could concentrate and pay attention to the bracha given by the Kohanim at the same time that they were reciting Psukim. And today it's a Yiridus Hadoris, we can't concentrate. So if you want to, you should look in the Siddur and be mechavin the Pasuk that's printed, but you really shouldn't say any Psuk. You should pay attention to the brachas recited by the Kohanim. Every Erev Shabbos we bench licht before Shabbos, of course, by Mamadlikin. You're not allowed to light the candles on Shabbos, it's a malacha. What about on Yontif? On Yontif, we're not permitted to strike a match to be Moladesh Mechorosh, but you're permitted to light a flame from an already existing flame. So if it's dark in the house, you're permitted to light a candle from an already existing flame. So when does the Balabasta bench licht? So many women have the practice that they bench licht when the husband comes home from shul, they bench licht on Yontif. So many poskim hold that that's not proper, that more correct is that just like on Erev Shabbos, they should bench licht before Shabbos enters, and Erev Yontif as well, many poskim hold. Rav Soloveitchik used to encourage like that, more correct is that they should bench licht before Yontif begins. That's exactly the mitzvah of kibud. Kibud means the hachanas that you do in advance of Yontif, in advance of Shabbos, and oinig is the pleasure that one gets on Shabbos and Yontif, from the fact that the house is lit up, from the fact that the table is set, from the fact that the carpet is swept, from the fact that the food is all prepared and everything has a Shabbos-dike atmosphere. So the mitzvah of kibud requires that we should do hachonis mebod yom. Says in Shulchan Aruch, it's not permissible to cook on the first day yontif or the second day yontif. The heter rechon nefesh is only to cook on yontif for that day, not to cook on the first day for the second day, not only to cook, which is a malacha, even to do an act of hachana on the first day for the second day, also not permissible. Let's say you left some food in the freezer, and you want to serve that food the night of the second Seder. And if you're going to wait till the husband comes home after Tzeis HaKochavim, the night of the second Seder, you're going to take it out from the refrigerator, take a few hours till it defrosts, it won't be ready for the meal. So you want to take it out of the freezer on the first day Yontif, that it should defrost, and be ready for warming it up the night of the second day Yontif. So that's not really proper. That's achana on the first day for the second day. Even though you're not doing a malacha, achana shein malacha is awesome at the rabbanah. It's still not allowed to. So one should chachamena berosha. One should plan in advance and take out of the freezer before Yontif begins. Whatever they think, they put it in the refrigerator before Yontif begins. So you won't have to take it out on the first day for the second day. Many people make a mistake. They remember that on Leil Rosh Chodesh, if you forget to say Yalav Yov and Nishman Esrei, you don't have to daven over again. So people think the same applies to Chol HaMoed. The one who davens Ma'ariv on Chol HaMoed and forgets to say Yalav Yov doesn't have to repeat the Shman Esrei. So the Gemara says explicitly that it's not so. This is only a kula on Leil Rosh Chodesh because whatever the explanation is, the Gemara says because Ein Mekatchen Es HaChodesh Balayla. That explanation does not apply to Chol HaMoed. So Chol HaMoed, the din is that if one forgets to say Yalav Yov and Nishman Esrei, whether Shachris, Mincha, or Ma'ariv, one is required to repeat the Shemoneh Esrei. You have to make sure you daven from a siddur and you say Yalav Yovein. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos talks about one who is Mevazeh Samoyadois, that it's a serious Averis. Rashi in his commentary on the Mishnah says that refers to one who is Mevazeh Cholamoid. And Mevazeh Samoyadois, that it's not proper. A lot of people wear big dechol. They wear the regular jeans that they would wear on a regular weekday, they wear on Cholamoid. That's not right. Shulchan Aruch says he's supposed to have different begodim, different kinds of suits. So on Yom Tov he's supposed to have a fancier suit than on Shabbos. And Shabbos is supposed to be fancier than Chalamoid. And Chalamoid is supposed to be fancier than the weekdays. Most people don't have a difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov. We're not so wealthy. So we can't afford to have so many different sets of clothing. The Shabbos and Yom Tov, they wear the same. But Chalamoid, you're not allowed to wear the same as the weekdays. So if you only have two types of clothing, you don't have fanciest for Yom Tov and less fancy for Shabbos and less fancy for Chalamoid. And plain for the weekdays, if you only have two sets of clothing, then Chalamoid you should wear big day Shabbos v'yanta. Chalamoid has a kedushas hayom. You should dress up properly. One is not permitted to do malacha on Chalamoid. There's a big machlekes in the Rishonim whether this is a din deraisa or a din derabbanan. And Shulchan Aruch halacha lemaisa, it's also a machlekes with slight ramifications. Nafkaminas halacha lemaisa. Mechaber paskins that malachas Chalamoid is only the rabbanan. And the Ramah paskins, the Malachas Chalamoid is deraisa with slight nafkaminas. There are five kulas. When are you permitted to do Malach and Chalamoid? So one kula is poil vein lamayochalap. A man is so poor, he simply doesn't have any savings. And if he's not going to do any Malach and Chalamoid, he won't have enough food. He won't have enough money to buy food. So poil vein lamayochalap is permitted to do Malach and Chalamoid. Unfortunately, under contemporary circumstances, there are people who used to be able to afford the food. There are people today, religious Jews, who are poel ve'elam ayochel. But most people do not fall under that category. Then, of course, one is permitted to do malacha letzorach hamoed. Let's say you wanna go drive somewhere to visit friends. You wanna go on a picnic. So you wanna drive somewhere to go on a picnic. So that's considered letzorach hamoed. You wanna cook some food to eat on chalamoed. You wanna cook food for yontif. That's Tzorach HaMoed is mutter. Tzorach HaRabim is also mutter. Let's say people work for a living, so don't have time to take care of anything on the shul premises. And people have off on Chalamoed. They don't go to work on Chalamoed. That's the only time they have to fix up things in the shul, or to fix up the highways. Today, the government fixes up the highways. In the days of the Tanaim, the community, the Balabatim community, had to volunteer. So Tzorach HaRabim are permissible. One is permitted to do Malach on Chalamoed for the purpose of Tzorach HaRabim. The other two haterim are the two that we rely on, that melechas hedyot is mutter. If you don't do melechas suman, it's permissible to do a melecha, and to do a dava ha'ovid is mutter. Dava ha'ovid means I invested a lot of money, and if I'm not going to do this melecha, I'm going to lose what I had. I already had something, and I'm going to lose what I have. Doesn't mean dava ha'ovid, I'm not going to get a salary. That's understood. Let's say if I don't go into work the week of Chalamoid, so they're going to dock me my salary. So that's not a dava ha'ovid. That's you're supposed to give up your salary for Chalamoid. If you're afraid that you lose your job, or you lose out a lot. If the farmer's not going to water his farm on Chalamoid, so everything that he planted, he invested so much money in planting, everything is going to go down the drain. Does he start dava ha'ovid? The money that he had already, he's going to lose. Not that he's not going to gain revach. So dava ha'avid is mutter, as long as there's not too much tircha. And the melechas hedyot is also mutter. About writing, it's an issue. About let's say a person has to do some assignments, you have to do some reading on Chalamoid. So in the Shulchan Aruch, they don't imagine a guy going to college having readings. So they talk about people learning svarim. The guy's going to learn in a safe, and he's afraid he's going to forget what he learned unless he writes notes. So he learned it and he knows it now, and he's going to lose what he learned. That's called dava ha'avid. He learned it and he knows it now, but he wants to jot down notes to make sure he doesn't forget it. So that's considered dava ha'avid. Okay, so if a person you're permitted to read the college work on Chalamoid, if you're afraid you're going to forget what you read and you're going to need it to write a paper for some exam, so to write down notes would also be considered a dava ha'avid. But aside from these five heterim, it's not proper. One should dress up properly on Chalamoid with big day Chalamoid or big day Shabbos v'yanta, whatever happens to be. And one should try not to do any malachas on Chalamoid. Things that are on exeris, let's say a tiltal to handle muktzeh, is not even a malachim midirabbanon. So that says in Shulchan Aruch that that's mutter. To take medications are mutter. Even al yantav sheni, we assume one is permitted to take medication. That's a gzera. The yantav sheni, they weren't gozer on refuas. Yantav rishon, the same as Shabbos, one is not permitted to take refuas unless he's a chayl l'shem b'sakana. Yantav sheni chalamoid, refuas are mutter. To play a piano is a machlokes, to play musical instruments is generally assumed that it's mutter. Because to play a musical instrument is only a gzeira midirabbanan. If you ride on horseback, Tosis writes in Moed Katan that it's not permissible. In Shulchan Aruch, we don't accept shitas Tosis, because riding horseback is not a malachim in Atar, it's not a malachim in Rabban, it's only a gzeira. Whatever is only a gzeira, they never prohibited. But all the things that are malachis, one is not permitted to do on Chalamoid. You're allowed to turn on the light if you need the light on Chalamoid. If you don't need it, that's questionable. Are you allowed to flick on the switch just for no purpose whatsoever? Because absolutely there's no tircha whatsoever. So that's a suffix. They never had such a thing centuries ago. They never had it. That turning on a light, there's absolutely no tircha whatsoever. So that could be that the flick on the switch, where there's absolutely no tircha whatsoever, maybe it is mutar chalamad, even shalot tzarech klal. But we really shouldn't do that. One should try to observe the malachas chalamad, not to do any malacha, unless he really needs the tzarech hamoyed, the davar ha'aved, and so on. I thought maybe I'd close just in a few minutes with some comments on the Haggadah. the Medrash poses a question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu by the Bris Ben Absarim, that the Jewish people would be in Golas Mitzrayim for 400 years. On the Maaseh, we were only in Mitzrayim for 210 years. So what happened to the 400 years? So different Midrashim give different answers. So one Medrash gives an answer. Rashi and Chumash quotes it, that the 400 years began from late As Yitzchak Ger Yozarach Beretz Lo'elohem. Zaracho is the son of Avraham Avinu, that's Yitzchok, from the day that Yitzchok was born till Yitzias Mitzrayim was 400 years. The other Medrash gives a different answer that seems to be totally different. The other Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't really mean that the Mitzrayim should make the Jews work so hard. And the Koshi HaShibud was Mashlim, the missing 190 years. They were only in Egypt for 210 years, but the Egyptians made them work so hard, it was the equivalent of 400 years worth of work. So these are two different, totally different answers. So it's quoted in the name of Rabbel Bala Soloveitchik that you need the both answers, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said in Exeria, 400 years, Vavon Avinu Oysen 400 years. So the Ger Yezarach Beretz Lalahem, that begins from late As Yitzchak, that's 400 years till Yitzias Mitzrayim. But Avon Avinu Oysam, they're going to work for 400 years. They weren't working for 400 years. For that, the Medrash had explained, the Koshi HaShibud was Mashlim. So these didn't necessarily have to coincide. The 400 years beginning from late As Yitzchak didn't necessarily have to coincide with the end of 400 years worth of work that the Mitzrayim were making the Jews do in Mitzrayim. But that's where Avelvel interpreted the line in the Haggadah. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Es HaKeitz, Kadosh Baruch Hu calculated that the two units of 400 years should end simultaneously. That the 400 years starting from late As Yitzchak of Ger Yezarach Beretz Lalohem should end at the same time that the Koshi HaShibud was the equivalent to 400 years. That's the Cheshbon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chishev Es HaKeitz, that the both calculations of 400 years ended at the same time. Velvela had a beautiful comment on Rebbe Kivega's Kasha. The Mishnah in Brochas quotes the Machloikas Hatanoim. How do you darshan the Pasuk? Mantiska Sem Tzeischa Mi'eretz Yisrael Kol Yimei Chayecha. So the Tanoim understand Lamantiska Laman Taskir. You should mention Yitzias Mitzrayim. Not you should mention. That's Zechiris Yitzias Mitzrayim every day. So one Tana says, Kol Yimei Chayecha Yimei Chayecha Hayamim Kol Yimei Chayecha Halilos, that there's a mitzvah of Zechiris Yitzias Mitzrayim by Yom HaBalayla, every day in Shachris, and every night the Ma'ariv, that's the third parasha in Kriya Shema. The Chachamim disagree, and they say, Yimei Chayecha Ho'elam Azeh, Kol Yimei Chayecha Lohavi Limois HaMashiach. There is no chiyuv to be maske Yitzias Mitzrayim Balayla. It's not necessary to say the third parasha by Yom at night, only in the daytime, and the word kol is not Mar Balaylas, but rather Kol Yimei Chayecha Lohavi Limois HaMashiach. So Rabbi Kivega on the Mishnah's Brochas poses the question, how come by Yimos HaMashiach it says Lahavi Lemos HaMashiach, and how come the first Tan who said Kol Yimei Chayecha Halilos, why didn't he say Yimei Chayecha Hayamim Kol Yimei Chayecha Lahavi Halilos? How come only the Chachamim say Lahavi? That's Rabbi Kivega quotes that Kasha from early Rashi. So Rav Belville Soloveitchik explained as follows. He said, according to the Chachamim who say Lahavi the Moshe HaMashiach means that the Chiyuv Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim that we have today will continue into Yemos HaMashiach. The exact same mitzvah will continue to apply. Even though the Pasuk in Novi sounds like it says that Yitzias Mitzrayim will be eclipsed by the Gulu HaSida, no one will be talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim. So the Chachamim say it's not true. Lahavi Yemos HaMashiach. So Lahavi means Yomarbe, the Chiyuv that we have today will continue to exist into Yemos HaMashiach, even though it will be eclipsed by the Gulu HaSida. But according to the first Tana, Yimecha Yecha Hayamim Kol Yimecha Yecha Hali Elos, it's a different Chiyuv. Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim Bayom, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim Balaylo, the Shagasari has a famous Kam. These are two different Chiyuvim. So you can't say Lahavi Halelos. It's not Lahavi, it's not Balaylo, you have the same Chiyuv as Bayom. No. Kol Yimecha Yecha Hali Elos, it's a separate Chiyuv Yitzias Mitzrayim, Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim Bayom, and a separate chiyuv is the chiyuv yitzias mitzrayim b'leilah. Rav Belville Soloveitchik had his own unique style of commenting on psukim and commenting on mamori chazal. This was his unique style. Okay, I wish everybody kosher and feilich and yontif. Chag kosher v'sameach.